Welcome. I'd like to welcome everybody listening all around the world, hither and thither, to and fro, back and forth, up and down, east and west, north and south, far and near. This is Coast to Coast AM. We are live from the City of Angels, right here from the Coast to Coast AM studios in Los Angeles, California. And we made it. If you can hear my voice right now, that means we survived another end-of-the-world prediction this past Wednesday, September 23rd. How is everybody doing tonight? Well, we do have one of those shows, and heading into the morning, I want you to get comfortable, get that beverage of choice, get your blankie, turn down the lights, and get close to those speakers, because tonight we have Richard Dolan with us. And over the past two decades, Richard has, whether he likes it or not, he has become the face of a new generation for ufology, for disclosure, for the truth. And when you sit with Richard, and I have many times, it becomes very apparent that he comes from a very pragmatic black and white position, with some shades of gray, of intelligence. He is researched, and above all, he cares. His mind is always moving forward, and tonight we'll be talking about the increasingly hostile climate for whistleblowers and the role of disclosure, what it will play around the world for the United States, as well as updates on UFOs in Russia and in China. And it's Friday, which means the second half of the show is open lines. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Before we get to all of that, I want to bring in Lee Spiegel of the Huffington Post. And Lee, welcome to Coast to Coast. How are you tonight?
Well, it's great to be here with you, Jimmy, and I'm on the same coast as you tonight.
Welcome to the West Coast.
Thank you very much. Well, I figured if the end of the world was going to happen, it was going to happen to me first on the East Coast.
Isn't that a strange thing? I was watching the countdown this week. You know, we have 2 hours left, and I was thinking, wait a minute, you know, we're 3 hours ahead on the East Coast. We would have known out here in advance on the West Coast. Or Australia certainly would have let us know.
That's right. That's right. We'd have to give them the first crack at it.
Well, you know, and I had said, you know, if on the 25th, Friday night, I'm standing in for George at the Coast to Coast Studios, that means we are still here, and we are here. Lee, I just have to ask you directly.
Yes.
How did the mass media treat this end of the world scenario for the 23rd? You know, with the Pope coming here. And asteroids. How did the Huffington Post and the rest of the mass media treat this end of the world?
There were several stories from all media, as there always are, Jimmy, when it comes to end of the world stuff, Mayan apocalypse stuff a few years ago. I know that one of my colleagues at HuffPost was working on a story while I was getting ready to come out to the West Coast. And he was talking about, some people were talking of the restart of the CERN Large Hadron Collider, that by them just restarting this in Europe, that was going to cause such a chain reaction that we'd never survive it. And for those who don't know, it's the world's largest and most powerful particle accelerator. There's always been controversy about this thing. People have always suggested that we're tampering with things that we shouldn't be tampering with when we're dealing with particle acceleration. You know, can we go through time? Will it destroy the Earth? So that was like one of the simplest things. Then people were talking about a collision of Earth with a comet, and NASA put out a statement that said, no, we're not going to be hit by anything. We can protect ourselves from something like that. We have really good long-term ways of detecting if something's going to get close to us. But then when you think about it, Jimmy, really, what do we have to protect our planet if an asteroid or a comet is going to come near us? Is NASA telling us that, as they've shown in movies, as Hollywood has shown us, is there like an array of nuclear missiles in orbit around Earth facing outward, you know, aimed at something that might be headed in our direction? We don't know. But so far, there's been no collision. People are talking about Sunday night's supermoon.
Right.
You know, or what they call the blood moon. It's taking place on this Sunday, but it's kind of a jackpot thing that only happens once every 30 years. It's a very rare combination of supermoon when the moon is at its closest distance from Earth, and it's a full moon. But on a Sunday night, it's also going to be a total lunar eclipse, which will give it that blood red color that it's known for. Well, you know, conspiracy theorists or end of the world theorists which are saying and considering that when the Earth's shadow comes between the sun and the moon like that, we're done for. And for what it's worth, one of the reasons why I'm out here in California, I want to photograph this thing. So if it's going to be the end of the world a few days late on Sunday, I'll be photographing it. So,
well, the internet, Lee, the internet this time around with this EOW, this end of the world, certainly had enough evidence presented. It was a bit different from the Mayan calendar days in that we had the Pope's visit, we had the Day of Atonement, we had the Jewish calendar involved, we had September 23rd and so many different Hollywood productions going back 10 or 15 years. The date was repeated over and over again, and it seemed like it was enough evidence to cause alarm. And I think the mass media kind of ignored it this time around when all of the evidence was right in front of us. It wasn't just the Mayan calendar. It was coming at us from all directions. Why do you think mass media just chose to ignore it?
Because when the boy who cried wolf, when you cry wolf, you know, how many times before you realize you don't have to pay attention to whoever's crying wolf? I'm pretty sure that mass media had other things that it really wanted to talk about. Well, just the very fact that the Pope came here for the first time and was at ground zero. In the morning after he arrived in New York. I mean, that is kind of bigger news than the possible whimsical tales of Earth colliding with a comet. I mean, it's like if you're going to have to report any kind of news and there's a potential that the Earth is going to be done away with, well, let's just report the stuff that we know is still really news, really breaking news. The end of the world is not breaking news. It's hardly that. We've had so many people over the decades proclaiming that certain dates were going to be the apocalypse, the Armageddon is going to happen, another planet is going to find its way around us in its large orbit around the sun, and we're going to collide with it. I mean, really, how many times will we cry wolf when we realize we don't need to report on these things anymore? But, Jimmy, the public does kind of eat this up.
They do, and let me ask you, December 22nd, 2012, the day after, did you wake up and wipe your brow and just like, whew, we're still here?
Well, no, and one of the reasons I didn't was because I think by then I kind of realized it was foolish. One of the people I interviewed for the story that I wrote about the 2012 apocalypse was I spoke to 1960s heartthrob crooner Pat Boone. Okay. You know, love letters in the sand, Pat Boone. One of my heroes from being one of the stars of the great science fiction movie Journey to the Center of the Earth. Pat Boone, a devout Christian, I believe, told me that he and his family weren't concerned about the apocalypse. Why? Because he had already built a backyard survival shelter in case it happened.
And he wasn't the only one, Lee.
Yeah.
He was not the only one. Well, listen, Lee, tomorrow night you're here on the West Coast. Why are you here?
I am here as a participant in the Mutual of New York, the Mutual UFO Network, and they're never going to let me live that down. It's the annual symposium. It's here in Irvine, and you and I were cast members this past year on the History Channel Hangar One series, which is based on the MUFON archive files of UFO reports. And tomorrow night, there's going to be what they're calling a special Hangar One hangout with the cast and crew that the Hotel Irvine here in Irvine, and you and I are going to be, we're going to finally meet face to face, which will be great. And we're going to get to meet people who want to come over and just say hello, chat, talk about UFO experiences, and have a great time.
We'll see you tomorrow night. Thank you so much, Lee. And, you know, we made it. And that's the most important thing.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Lee Spiegel, Huffington Post, everybody. I am your host, Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM. You can follow me on Twitter at JChurchRadio. You can email throughout the show tonight, jimmychurch@coasttocoastam.com. Richard Dolan is our guest tonight, and we'll be getting right to Richard right after this. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, tonight sitting in, standing in, because here in the Coast to Coast studios, we stand, standing in for George Norrie tonight. You can follow me on Twitter. To my left, I have my Twitter feed going active. Any questions for Mr. Dolan tonight, you can do that, and that is at J Church Radio. Very simple. Richard Dolan is one of the world's leading researchers and writers on the subject of UFOs. He completed his graduate work at the University of Rochester, where he studied U.S. Cold War strategy, European history, and international diplomacy. Before that, he had studied at Alfred University and Oxford University and was a finalist for a Rhodes Scholarship. Richard hosts his weekly radio show. It's called The Richard Dolan Show on KGRA Radio, and it's currently featured on Ancient Aliens and Hangar One, The UFO Files. His current books are UFOs in the National Security State, 1 and 2, AD After Disclosure with Bryce Abel, and his latest work is UFOs for the 21st Century Mind. I would like to welcome back to Coast, Mr. Richard Dolan. Richard, how are you this evening?
Doing very well, Jimmy. Thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Yeah, you know, I know it's late over there, but, you know, this is what late night, overnight radio is all about, is getting serious and braving the dark. So let's do this together. Are you ready?
Absolutely.
Richard, you know, in the intro, and you and I have spoken a lot over the years, and we're friends, but the one thing that I'm almost always intimidated by you is that you are truly, whether you like it or not, you're a face for a new generation of disclosure and ufology. And do you feel that pressure, and do you enjoy it?
Wow, that's an interesting question. I will say, when my very first book appeared, the first volume of UFOs in the National Security State, that was in 2000, and then was republished in 2002 with a larger publishing company. I remembered feeling that the book seemed to a lot of people around me, like I had no understanding of the UFO culture. I was very much an outsider when I researched and wrote that book. And then I broke in and I realized there were a number of people who said, wow, this is an interesting book. And what I did discover is that it seemed to be an influential book. I would say that it was really the first kind of a new way of looking at the UFO phenomenon from a distinctively politicized point of view, looking at the cover-up, for example, and I really wasn't shying away from it. So, and then after that book came out, came 9/11, and the entire generation, not simply of UFO research, but of world culture became, I think, in a lot of ways, very radicalized. So that the kind of the seemingly radical statements that I had made in that very first book suddenly didn't seem so radical. I think they seemed kind of right on to a lot of folks. So in that sense, I do feel that the work that I've done historically has been, looking back on it now 15 years, it's been influential, certainly, and in the last 5-6 years, I've just been standing back kind of amazed at seeing how people in our community sometimes look at me and will write about me. It's an odd feeling knowing that there are folks out there who look at me in a certain way as a thought leader of this field. My attitude is I take that with a great responsibility. It's important for me to do my job well, and it's important for me to do the very best I can because, A, I really do believe that this field deserves the very best that I can give it. But also, I guess I don't... if there's a lot of people out there who want me to do well, I would like to do my best for them.
Well, you could have enjoyed a tenured life somewhere at some college, some university. You would have your elbow patches on your jacket and maybe even a pipe and a cardigan sweater. You could have gone down that road, but you chose this path. Do you think you made the right decision?
I made the only decision I could possibly make, Jimmy. Honestly, I've thought about this many, many times, and I was designed exactly to do what I thought, would be the life of a professor, teaching at a very good university. My colleagues, my mentors all thought, yeah, that's what he's going to do. But when I look back, I really do see that there were things that were just guiding me into the path that I've gone. Even back in those days, I was always a bit of a maverick. I was always sort of out of the norm. I wasn't a typical student ever, I don't think. And I was always asking questions that dealt with the subterranean aspects of our world. Even back in those days, I was doing a lot of study of the intelligence community, which was difficult back in the 1980s and early 90s. There was no internet, and the number of books available on, for example, the CIA were much, much fewer than there are today, quite a lot fewer. But this is always my interest. So, and not as an insider, not as someone who wanted to work for the CIA, but someone who was a critic and an analyst of it, I guess I could say.
The
So
last
this led me into being outside the system, and I've always seen myself that way.
Time you and I were together, which was a few months ago, we were braving the sun, sitting next to each other out of contact in the desert. And
That's right.
the one thing that I noticed, and we were able to, hang out, in such close proximity for a couple of days there. And what I noticed was people coming up, asking questions, and some of them pretty serious, but you were very, very, because they are there for you, and they've been waiting to meet you and ask you these very important, they have thought about this for a long time, this moment.
That's right.
And you are very, very, very cautious about what you say in reply. Is that something that you rehearse, or are you aware? How aware are you, Richard? I'm asking you directly, of what you say influences, somebody so directly.
I'm very aware of this. It's interesting. No one's ever asked me this question. But I don't rehearse anything, but I am very, by my nature, extremely careful. And I do know that there are people, that yes, what I say to them will have a certain amount of weight for whatever reason, rightly or wrongly, but that's how they look at it. And they'll perceive me that way. What I never want to do, because I'm very aware that in this field of ours, the UFO subject is intrinsically not simply the most fascinating subject of our time, it is, but it's intrinsically one of the most difficult subjects of our time. It's a tough nut to crack in a lot of ways because I think we're dealing with a phenomenon that is operating at a level that's beyond our normal level. And so we struggle to comprehend it. And as a result, it takes bravery, it takes creativity. But it also takes caution because it really is easy to go off into the deep end. And when you look at 70 plus years now of UFO research and open field study of it, there's been some great work and there's been some work that's just been really, really off base. And what I don't want to do is lead people astray.
We're going to be up against a break in about 2 minutes, so I'll ask you something a little fun. Have you ever said something that you just wanted to take back?
I let a lot of language slip that I probably shouldn't when I'm in public. I have to be careful about that. In terms of like UFO related statements, I'll have to think about that. Yeah, I mean, there's been a couple of moments where I've probably endorsed something or spoken out where it would have been better if I'd probably just wait a little longer.
And as we head into the break, I want to set up what we're going to talk about after the break. right now, with the internet, with shows like this, it is very easy to talk about ufology or sightings or videos or posts and create a buzz out there.
Yeah.
And it is something that it is all over the internet right now, and you can't put the brakes on it. So think about that, Richard. We're going to talk about that when we come back. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Tonight, Richard Dolan. Second half of the show, your calls all night long. Open lines. Follow us on Twitter at JChurchRadio. Email is jimmychurch@coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back right after this. Stay with us. For those that know me are laughing right now. That's right. Europe, the final countdown. We did survive September 23rd, September 24th. It is September 25th. We are here tonight live. And you can catch George Norrie's internet TV show. It's called Beyond Belief, for dynamic discussions on the paranormal phenomena, conspiracies, and all things unexplained. Check out the episodes with Richard Dolan. You can do it right now for just 99 cents for the first month and enjoy hours of fascinating past shows. Just go to beyondbelief.com. And right there at the front of the homepage for Coast to Coast AM is a Beyond Belief preview with my good friend Chase Kletsky. You can go check that out right now. That is beyondbelief.com. Tonight, Richard Dolan is with us. We have him right here on Coast to Coast AM. This is your host for the night, Jimmy Church, and more with Richard Dolan right after this short break. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast to Coast AM. I'm standing in for George Norrie tonight. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Richard Dolan is considered by many to be the preeminent historian of the UFO phenomenon in the world. He's the author of two volumes of history, UFOs in the National Security State, 1 and 2, as well as The Analysis of the Future, AD After Disclosure, The People's Guide to Life After Contact, with Bryce Zabel. And Richard, I had said before the break, there's an extraordinary amount of stuff out there that we have to weed through every single day. And when we look at this, what do you do, and what filter do you run to get through it all? And yeah. and is there some of it, Richard, where you step back and go, you know, holy smokes, we have something here?
Well, one of the first things that I do is that when I see someone making predictions, I always say to myself, okay, that's someone who I don't really think has credibility. I have gone through so many predictions. We all went through the build-up to the 2012 Mayan calendar prediction of ascension or end of the world, or however you wanted to have your own variation of that. That was such an unbelievable buildup. And I recall people writing to me frequently asking me, what did I think about this? And what I thought then and what I think now is that it was a supreme waste of our time and our mental effort. Excuse me. There are predictions constantly about disclosure. There are predictions constantly about some major event. There are predictions about the so-called Project Blue Beam, I remember from back in 2010, and on, the list is endless. The latest was the prediction for September 23rd, which, incidentally, I enjoyed your discussion with Lee Spiegel starting off the show on that. Lee was really right on point about what he had to say, and I agree with what you have to say. This is a big distraction, and and it just never stops. And it seems like there is an endless public thirst for these predictions. And I would just mention that, you know, there's a word for the end of the world belief. It's called millennialism. And the reason it's called millennialism is because the first major trend of, like, this belief in the end of the world happened in the year 1000 AD, so 1,000 years ago, a little more than that, as the clock was turning. This is like their version of Y2K, except it was just YK. And a lot of people were convinced that there was going to be the second coming and the world was going to end. And so that didn't happen. But throughout the centuries, it's a constant buzz. People are constantly talking about the end of the world. They're usually using a biblical connotation for that. But people will use whatever ideology that suits them. So So I think that this is it's a distraction for me. There's a lot of other information that comes out that's simply not, we're not able to credit it one way or the other. It's simply out there. A lot of whistleblowers, or let me say so-called whistleblowers, and it's not even necessary to pinpoint any of them specifically. There are real whistleblowers in the world. There's people like Edward Snowden and Julian Assange. And in the UFO field, there is Gary McKinnon. Let's not forget him. Gary McKinnon was a real whistleblower. Why? Because we know for sure that he was hounded for years and years by the United States government on the basis of what he talked about having found on the website of U.S. Space Command and elsewhere. So these are real identifiable people with actual information to provide. When we are dealing with so-called whistleblowers who really provide nothing other than a good story, the problem is, you know, it's great if it sounds really good to us, but that doesn't really qualify as evidence or proof. And really the problem is we can just get very, very distracted. And in a field like UFOs, I really feel it's important that we have to distinguish between what we know and what things look like and what we think. It's perfectly valid to speculate. I do it all the time. But I'm always trying to distinguish my speculations from what I know is factually true. It's a big difference.
Well, with National Security State, both volumes, are you included in your own definition of whistleblower? Are you a whistleblower?
Oh, wow. No, I'm a historian. And so what I've done is, there's some information in my research that I and I alone uncovered, so some of that is true, but I still wouldn't say that that makes me a whistleblower. That would make me a journalist or a historian. There are people, though, you know, who have done very brave work in ferreting out information, and what I have tried to do, I've always been a very synthetic kind of a person. That's the way my mind works, so I like to see big pictures, and I like to synthesize a lot of different facts and organize them in ways that make sense. So if that's really my contribution, I think that's really what I can do.
Why is it
that I'll get something fresh out and pull something really new out? You never know.
Sure. And why is it, Richard, for the audience to grow so quickly when it comes to a story, a whistleblower's version of something that proliferates? It's like an out of control virus, and it just grows so quickly. Why is that? Why do we put ourselves in that position to be? Is the word gullible? Is that correct?
Yeah, a lot of this is the power of the internet. I think back in the 1970s and 80s, way before that, when UFO research was really on the sidelines, there wasn't as much of that. There really wasn't. There were some very outlandish stories, but these were being actively researched and vetted by researchers who were really doing their best. With the birth of the web in the last couple of decades, there's a lot of benefits to that, where, you know, you find people who would not have had access to this type of information, now they can have access to it. But it also means that pretty much anyone can chime in. Anyone can have an opinion, and anyone can copy and paste the latest rumor that comes along their Facebook wall and spread it for the rest of their friends. And, there's just not a lot of fact-checking. In my latest book, UFOs for the 21st Century Mind, I actually spend a fair amount of time trying to explain ways so that people just don't get hosed by the next rumor that comes their way. There's basic things that anyone can do some fact-checking on images in terms of a reverse image search or a search by date to find the origin of a particular story, to find out, at least to give you a better idea on how to judge, to be your own journalist.
But
that doesn't usually happen.
You're right. Well, you brought up Gary McKinnon earlier and Edward Snowden, too, as well. And the whistleblowers of the past that have had a reason to be scared. Bad things. It was not a good life for Gary McKinnon, having two governments fight over him.
No.
His life was ruined. And it discourages from other whistleblowers coming forward. Edward Snowden's life has not been great since he revealed everything about the NSA, and he backed it up with documents, and he was a true whistleblower, and the same thing with Gary McKinnon. But does that discourage, a real whistleblower from coming forward?
I think it does. Think about Chelsea Manning. My goodness.
Yes.
She's doing solitary right now in one of the most barbaric types of situations that I can imagine. So, yes, absolutely. And it's not simply the United States where this is happening, where whistleblowers are being prosecuted, although they are. They were very heavily prosecuted under George W. Bush, and they are being very heavily prosecuted under President Barack Obama. There's been no let-up. You go to other nations around the world, and the consequences are becoming very similar throughout Europe, in many other nations where there's not even a pretense of democratic rule. I mean, don't even bother. You know, it's impossible. But, yeah, I think in the Western countries, post 9/11 in particular, there's been a new mood, and the mood is you are not going to be revealing federal secrets, no matter how justified you think they are, because we will come and get you. And this has been the rule. Whistleblowers are targets. So it's hard. So when you see, again, in the UFO field, these various people, and there's so many coming out as so-called whistleblowers, none of whom have confirmed credentials, none of whom, I'm from way over here. I have no way of vetting any of these people because they provide no information that can be vetted. It just makes me wonder, in this type of environment, how are these people really able to speak as openly as they claim to be?
Well, and how do you determine who could possibly be a classic disinfo agent? You and I were talking about this earlier today on the phone, and I think it's an interesting subject to cross because to bring forward. We have so many different situations in the past where tragic things have happened with disinformation. You know, people have died, and it's something where we're dealing today with whistleblowers where you just don't know who is real and who isn't, and who could be just quite, some proxy for for some three-letter agency out of Washington, D.C.
Well, I think that there are such people in this field who probably serve that purpose. I may never know for sure if such and such a person fulfills that purpose, but I think people can be used in that way. For example, you even go back 30, 35 years ago, after the Freedom of Information Act came through in the 70s, and we got a lot of declassified, legitimately declassified UFO documents that came out, and a lot of leaks that were coming out relating to crash retrievals, not just Roswell. I think and I wrote about this in one of my volumes of National Security State, that what we saw was a concerted effort by U.S. intelligence to throw disinformation into the field in a variety of ways. And I think we're seeing that today as well. If I were a government agent and I wanted to lay waste to the UFO research field and cause distraction away from real issues, away from like a real secret space program, I would absolutely be bringing people in to talk about outlandish secret space programs that have no credibility really in the public mind, and that simply would bring discredit to the whole concept of the secret space program. And it would be so easy to do this. There's a number of people out there who are willing to interview these individuals and give them publicity and credit. And the next thing you know, you've got these stories out, and they're just part of the public discussion. And people talk about them as if they're proven, and in fact, they're not proven in the least. And in fact, they could easily be specifically designed to steer us off the path of truth.
Have you been approached by a whistleblower with said information and well, I'll just stop right there. Have you ever been approached by somebody that had something they wanted to disclose?
Yes, absolutely, I have, and the individuals that I have spoken to all have, the ones that I took seriously, all have proven credentials that I know who they are. Like, I know their rank. I know their actual first and last names, and I often know their spouses, and I know a lot of things about them. So, and some of them are quite famous, and so I consider them genuine, valid whistleblowers. That doesn't mean that everything they tell me is 100% truthful, by the way. I've talked about this a number of times. A scientist who, very high level, very brilliant man, had conversations with Bill Clinton and other people high up, and I know who he is, and I think that he has integrity, and even him, when he tells me certain things, I probably believe him, but I can't take it as 100% fact. Other individuals who are equally prominent, equally brilliant, you never really know. This field is like a hall of mirrors, and it's perfectly legitimate, and it's important for us to go down that rabbit hole and to get our feet dirty, as it were, get our hands dirty. But again, we have to remember, what do we absolutely know, and what is simply a claim that has to be verified? And we've got to be careful about distinguishing that.
Why is it that we seem to observe people speaking out in the military in Russia, for example? I think it's a really good example, where generals, colonels, captains, naval personnel, they don't have an issue with coming forward and speaking, credentialed, you know, medals on the chest, and they are they're free to speak their mind. But we don't see that over here. Is it because they don't get persecuted and prosecuted over in the Soviet Union or in the Soviet bloc in general?
We do get some generals and high level people here. There's General Albert Stubblebine.
Yes.
Who actually is I think he's got 4 stars, if I'm not mistaken. Or is it 2? He's highly decorated. And he's spoken very openly. He was one of the people who ran the remote viewing program for years and has talked openly about extraterrestrials. But I would say you're right. It's generally an exception. Russia, you know, during the end of the Cold War, had a spate of released documents, files, and a lot of generals, high-level generals, who spoke very openly, candidly, about the UFO phenomenon in their country. And more recently, back in December 2012, a couple of weeks before December 21st, there was a shocker statement by the Prime Minister of Russia, Dmitry Medvedev, who is the number 2 man in Russia to this day, next to Putin. And he was speaking to a journalist, seemingly after he gave another interview, off the cuff. And he talked about, along with the briefcase with nuclear codes, the president of the country is given a special top-secret folder that has information on the aliens who visited our planet. Along with this, he said, they're given a report of the secret special service that controls the aliens in the territory of Russia. And then that whole thing got a lot of laughs by the Western media when he said, you can get more detailed information on this from the well-known movie called Men in Black. And everyone said, ha, ha, ha. But actually, my understanding from Russian speakers is that what he actually said, you can get more detailed information from the documentary film Men in Black, which is a documentary movie in the Russian language and is a much more serious treatment of the UFO phenomenon. So was that what Medvedev meant? And I think, I don't know the man, I've never spoken to him, but my feeling is it very well could have been. He could have been speaking seriously. So the question is, why? Why would Russian politicians be more open about this? I think one reason is that it's almost certainly the United States that has dominated and continues to dominate UFO data. You know, we think about other nations with in terms of UFOs, like if Brazil gets a UFO that crashes. And in fact, there was an alleged case in Brazil from the 1990s in which people claimed to have seen an alien being. Is it true or not? I don't know. But if something went down in Brazil, there's no question that the United States military would be in charge of that. The United States military dominates pretty much every other military infrastructure out there, with the exception of Russia and China and a few other outlier countries. So that global, and this has been the case since the 40s, the United States military has been the dominant player. Now there's Russia and there's China, and they're wild cards to some extent. And the question is, would they disclose? And I don't have a strong feeling one way or the other. My guess is that they're probably not as invested in the cover-up as the U.S., but they still have their reasons for hanging on to that secret.
This is Coast to Coast. Stay right there, Richard Dolan. When we come back, we're going to pick it up right there because the Huffington Post just had an article about a Russian Republic head of state picked up an alien abduction. We'll be back right after this. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Right after this. Stay with us.